This is the Tactical Nutrition and Performance Podcast. I'm Susan Lopez, Tactical Dietitian, and I am here to help you elevate your performance through better nutrition programming, bridging the gap between knowledge and application to support the athlete with no off-season. We are going to be talking about everything from macros to stress to sleep and more. I will be bringing over a decade of coaching experience and nutrition know-how while introducing you to experts within the tactical and performance realm. If you are ready to take your health and performance to the next level and you are searching for information that is right and relevant for you, then you are in the right place. Let's get the show started. All right. Welcome back to the Tactical Nutrition and Performance Podcast. I'm Susan Lopez and I am super excited. I'm always really excited to do these podcasts, but I'm really excited today because we have Dr. Creatine himself, Dr. Scott Forbes, who's going to be talking about all things creatine with us. And there's always so much controversy still around creatine, even as I feel like the most studied and most researched supplement that there is on the market, there's just still a lot of misconceptions, misunderstandings. A lot of things about creatine are still being touted even by professionals within the dietetics community. So we're going to do our best today to try and clear up some of these myths about creatine. And we have the expert here with us today. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself, just so the listeners know where I'm coming from. I'm currently an associate professor at Brandon University in Canada. So go Canada. And basically, I do research. So I do research primarily on creatine supplementation with the hopes to enhance resistance training adaptation. So I tried to get bigger and stronger muscles in a variety of populations, from younger, healthy, athletic individuals all the way up to older adults. But now we know that there's some other benefits to creatine as well that I'm sure we'll get into the podcast later on in the conversation. I'd just like to point out that I'm not sponsored by any creatine company. I have received creatine for research purposes. So the companies have donated product to me to use in research, but they've had no say in the research that I've conducted, and the results, the data is what the data is. And so there's no conflict of interest. I'm not lining my pockets with a bunch of money because from big creatine.
Important disclaimer.
Yeah.
So let's dive into sort of the area that most people talk about when it comes to creatine. So creatine for muscle building, muscle growth, right? Let's kind of talk about that. Loading versus not needing to load. And what are some of the misconceptions maybe in that area?
Yeah, sure. That's a lot of questions. So I'm going to start out with just kind of the general. So what is creatine? So creatine is actually made up of three amino acids, arginine, glycine, and methionine. So amino acids are the building blocks of protein. So anytime you consume protein, you're consuming amino acids. So you can put these three amino acids together in your body, in your liver, and your kidneys. So your body produces creatine. So you shouldn't be afraid of it because your body is naturally producing it. Every single person in the world has creatine within their body. And you can also get creatine in your diet as well. So you can get it from like mostly animal-based sources, things like red meat, seafood, or chicken are kind of the main sources of creatine. And we can also get it as a dietary supplement. So once you take creatine, you can get it into your bloodstream, and about 95% of it is taken into the muscles. And it's converted into what we'd call phosphocreatine. And phosphocreatine is like stored potential energy. So anytime you're doing intense exercise, like lifting weights or sprinting upstairs, you're gonna use up energy, we call it ATP, and you're gonna have to replace that very quickly. And this is the fastest energy system to replace that ATP. So that's why creatine works. And we know that combining creatine with, for example, resistance training can make your muscles bigger and stronger. And this is a benefit to younger athletic individuals, trained and untrained, and also older adults as well. So we know that creatine is really effective as a supplement combined with exercise. And then you asked about loading phases, whether we need to load or not load. So there is some great studies done in the early 1990s, so quite a few years ago now. And what they did was they showed that if you took 20 grams per day for 5 days, you get about a 20% increase in the amount of creatine within your muscle. So that's a pretty big increase, and that's pretty robust and pretty cool. And then they dropped to a maintenance dose for the remainder of the study, and the total study length was 28 days. So basically, if you dropped down to a maintenance dose of, in that study, it was 2 grams a day, and maintained that 20% increase over that 28-day period. There was a second group that just consumed 3 grams a day. So they didn't load at all. And what they found was it took a little bit longer than 5 days to get that 20% increase. But by the end of the 28 days, they had a 20% increase in the amount of creatine within their muscle. So that basically shows that you don't have to load. You can consume a lower dose of creatine. It might just take a little bit longer. So whether you want to load or not is actually dependent on how quickly you want your muscles to be saturated with creatine and what your long-term goals are with creatine, why are you taking it, things like that. But the question of do you have to load is no, you don't. Just consuming a lower dose for a little bit longer period of time, you can get to the exact same creatine levels.
Okay. And so I think that clears that up pretty succinctly. Now, I have talked to some individuals who they have taken a break from taking creatine. So there was also this train of thought not too long ago that you had to cycle on and off creatine. And when you cycle off creatine, that you would have to do the loading phase in order to get the benefits. But it sounds like we don't have to do the loading phase. And it sounds like we can supplement for a decent amount of time. Is there any reason really to ever cycle off creatine?
So that's a great question as well. And there's actually been no research ever looking at cycling versus taking creatine continuously. So there has been studies that have been short duration and then looked at when you stop taking creatine, what happens. And then there's also been studies where you take creatine continuously for up to 2 years in duration. So we know that it's very safe if you take it every single day. We also know that if you stop taking creatine, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks for that increase in creatine to go back down to baseline. So it stays in your muscle for a relatively long period of time. So if you did cycle on and off creatine, take creatine for 4 weeks and then go off creatine for 4 weeks, it's probably not going to have a huge detrimental impact because it takes a while for it to return back to baseline. It might save you a little bit of money, but we also know that there's no downside to taking creatine continuously. So there was some evidence in rats where they gave a super high dose of creatine and they showed that it downregulated the endogenous production of creatine in these rats. And so that's where that thought process came from that, well, you don't want to stop your body from doing what it does naturally. And so basically you need to be aware of that and maybe cycling on and off creatine is safer. But what we found in humans is that there is no evidence of that occurring in the doses that we recommend, which is typically between 5 grams a day, all the way up to 20 grams a day during the loading phase. So if you take it in that dosage, it has no detrimental effect and you can take it every single day if you want to.
So what about the idea that I sometimes hear people say is they feel like creatine makes them feel bloated? Is that more just like anecdotal from the individual and maybe it's not the creatine? Is there any evidence that creatine can actually bloat you?
So that's a great question as well. And there are about 5% of the population, they might have some side effects associated with creatine and it might be associated with that loading phase. So we know already from the podcast that you don't have to do the loading phase. So that might be a strategy for those individuals that feel like a little GI distress when they take really the high doses of creatine, then just take a lower dose. And there is evidence that creatine can increase water retention within the muscle cell. So when creatine gets absorbed into the muscle, similar to carbohydrate. So if you absorb carbohydrate into the muscle, each gram of carbohydrate, there's actually 2.7 grams of water attached to it. That's why we can lose weight really quickly on a low carb diet, because you lose a lot of water weight. But with creatine, it kind of a similar mechanism. So as you bring creatine into the muscle, it also pulls in a little bit of water as well. But that water retention actually causes the muscle cell to swell. And that actually stimulates the muscle to grow. So it's actually a good thing to increase water within the cell, cause that cell swelling, because it stimulates muscle growth. So that's one of the mechanisms where creatine actually enhances muscle mass and muscle performance over time, is through increasing water retention. So if somebody's like, oh, like I'm getting like puffy muscles or watery muscles when I take creatine, I'm like, oh, that's awesome, because that's going to stimulate myogenic regulatory factor satellite cells and lead to bigger muscles over time. Like, you're so lucky. But some people are like, no, it's bad. Like, no, it's not bad. It's actually a good thing.
Yeah. And I think you made two really important points there, right? So anytime you have just sort of like a bolus of solid things in your stomach, right? So this is also for those of you out there who like to dry scoop salt, please don't do that, right? Anytime you sort of disrupt that fluid solid balance within the gut, right? Your body's going to try and pull some fluid into that gut to kind of dilute that out a little bit. So if you're taking, you know, 20 grams of creatine, potentially in one scoop, right? So even if you are loading, I typically don't recommend that, right? Because you're probably going to experience that GI distress. But also just if we're talking about bringing water into the muscle, the carbohydrate, right? Bringing water into the body and into the muscle, that's absolutely true, because the muscle, just like most of the body, is predominantly water, right? So all of the great things that happen within your body, within the muscle tissue, it sounds like happen kind of in that water environment. So it's definitely more beneficial than it is detrimental.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I didn't mention it for the loading phase, 20 grams a day, but usually it's separated into four doses. So you take 5 grams a day, four times throughout that day, and then that's 20 grams a day. So yeah, don't take 20 grams at once. Definitely.
You would be surprised some of the things that I hear. Actually, you probably wouldn't be surprised some of the things that I hear. You probably hear them as well.
Yeah, I definitely hear a few crazy things as well.
I love all this myth busting and debunking we're doing on creatine right now. Like I mentioned earlier, it's not unusual for me to occasionally run into even a dietitian who still, you know, believes that creatine is a steroid. There was also some, I think, thoughts early on when creatine came onto the scene that there was also going to be a problem with, you know, kidney function along with creatine. So I think we definitely need to hit on that one, and let's kind of debunk that one also.
Okay, so the first one's pretty easy, that creatine is not a steroid. completely different chemical structure. And we actually, so we wrote an article on common questions associated with creatine, and it's published, it's an open access article. So you can just Google search common questions of creatine and you'll find the article and you can read it. And we actually had a paragraph in there to show exactly why creatine is not a steroid. So if anyone ever calls creatine a steroid, just send them to that particular article, which is, I think, important for people to know that it is not. It can be anabolic, so it can help you grow muscles, but it's definitely not a steroid. And then the second question was associated with kidney function. And so again, there's no evidence that creatine is actually bad for your kidneys. And there has been some case studies. So these case studies, I believe there's 4 or 5 case studies that have linked creatine with some sort of kidney dysfunction. But when you actually look at those case studies, there's a huge amount of other possibilities that could be associated with the kidney dysfunction. First, they had either like pre-existing kidney disease or chronic kidney disease already. So they already had some sort of problems before they even started creatine supplementation. The other thing too is understanding that creatine is broken down into creatinine, and creatinine has been used as a marker of kidney function. But if you take creatine, creatinine is going to go up. And so the way that I kind of think of it is like, if you use heart rate, like resting heart rate as a marker of health, which it can be, you know, trained athletes have a lower resting heart rate than untrained or sedentary individuals. But if you don't take into account if they're just exercised or not, then you might be completely off. They might have a high heart rate because they just exercised, not because they're unhealthy. And so that's the same thing that kind of happens with creatine. So if you're on creatine, creatinine levels are going to go up. And people assume that, oh, that's bad. That means your kidneys are failing and you have kidney dysfunction, but they don't account for the creatine supplementation. So it's completely inappropriate and correct and inappropriate to do that. And so they get incorrect results. And so if you actually look at the evidence, creatine is very safe, and there is no evidence that taking creatine, even for really long periods of time, can impair kidney or renal function.
Yeah. And are we just talking about creatine monohydrate here for the most part, correct?
Yeah. So about 95% of the studies have been done on creatine monohydrate. So almost all the time when I'm talking about creatine, it's usually about creatine monohydrate, unless I specify some of the other isoforms or alternative forms of creatine.
And we are seeing, I know a common one that I'm seeing on the market, I believe, is the creatine hydrochloride. Is that correct?
Yep.
And what is the difference here between the monohydrate and that specific one? And is there really a reason to switch from monohydrate to the hydrochloride?
That's a great question. And there was a systematic review that was recently published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. And they tried to look at all the studies that compared alternative forms of creatine to creatine monohydrate to see if there is other, you know, better forms of creatine. But what they found, what they concluded, was that there is no robust evidence or strong evidence that other alternative forms are superior to creatine, particularly from a performance standpoint. And creatine monohydrate is actually the cheapest form of creatine. So I think from that perspective, I would stick to creatine monohydrate. And as I mentioned, about 95% of the studies that have ever been published on creatine have used creatine monohydrate. So we know that creatine monohydrate is safe. We know it's effective, and we know it's just as good or better than other alternative forms, and it's actually cheaper. So that's always my recommendation is, yeah, stick to creatine monohydrate.
So we know creatine is safe in active, generally healthy adults. We know that we don't have to load it. We can really kind of take it continuously. How can it also maybe be beneficial for maybe somebody who doesn't consider themselves very active? Are there benefits for a sedentary population too? I know you mentioned older adults as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we tried to address it in one article where we looked at creatine without exercise. So we tried to find all the studies published in the literature looking at creatine supplementation alone in sedentary older individuals. And we found, when we looked at muscle performance outcomes, there was 7 of the 11 studies showed some benefits of creatine to enhance muscle performance, even when it wasn't combined with exercise. And so there is some evidence that creatine can be a benefit. We also looked at other tissues as well. So there's some evidence that creatine can enhance bone health. And again, we looked at the studies that just looked at creatine supplementation without exercise. And for bone, it actually made no difference. There was no study that showed a positive effect of creatine on bone health when it did not combine it with exercise. And then we also looked at the effects of creatine on brain health in that study as well. And there's some evidence that creatine can also enhance cognitive performance as well. So when you think of just muscle performance, that's one thing, but there's other benefits of creatine as well. Other parts of the body, such as your bone or your brains, where creatine can be of benefit.
So let's kind of segue into the brain piece of it then, since you brought it up. We did discuss within one of my groups a few weeks ago about how creatine can be really effective in things such as sleep deprivation, intense exercise, traumatic brain injury, which is really important for the tactical population, as there can be a lot of negative effects of, you know, repeated brain injuries, repeated concussions, percussion injuries. So let's talk a little bit about how creatine can actually help improve maybe brain health.
Yeah, so similar to what happens in the muscle, so you can get, if you supplement with creatine, you can get more creatine in your brain. It's not as effective as what happens at the muscle. So at the muscle level, if we supplement with creatine, we're going to get about a 20% increase. There's a bit of a difference between individuals, and typically it's based off of fiber types. So if we have fast twitch fibers, we absorb a little bit more creatine. And then also if we have lower amounts of creatine in our diet, we tend to respond better to creatine supplementation. But in the brain, it's not as predictable who's going to increase the amount of creatine within their brain. But it's about a 5 to 10% increase for most people following supplementation. So you can get creatine in your brain. There is evidence for that. And if you have creatine in your brain, basically that creatine can be converted into phosphocreatine, and phosphocreatine can be broken down into ATP, which is energy, the energy currency. And so anytime your brain needs energy quickly, it can utilize this energy system. So that is one of the mechanisms where creatine can enhance brain function.
Yeah, and I think it's important that people know that too. I think a lot of us associate ATP with simply just muscle energy production, but ATP is really what generates work in the entire body, and the brain takes up a significant amount of energy to keep the body working.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes up about 20% of your resting energy, even though it only weighs about 2% of your body mass. So it's a very energetically demanding tissue. Yeah, so your brain uses a lot of energy.
Yeah, and I can definitely see this, especially for, let's say, somebody who's working on improving their absolute strength, right? So whenever you're working on absolute strength, very heavy CNS activity happening. So creatine supplementation could potentially be beneficial there. When it comes to, you know, the sleep, potential sleep benefits of creatine in the brain, can we explore what's happening there?
Yeah, so anytime you put your brain under stress, and there's a variety of ways that in the scientific world that we've stressed people's brains, but obviously, and it could be really relevant to people in the tactical world as well. Mental fatigue is one. So they made these people do these like crazy math problems for like 90 minutes. And so it just caused mental fatigue through these math problems. I'd be horrible at it. And, but what they found was those that took creatine had less of an impact from that mental fatiguing task. And then also with sleep deprivation as well. So if you're sleep deprived, you know, your cognition goes down. So if you don't get a good sleep, you wake up, you have to write an exam or something. You're just not functioning quite right. And you know that. But again, there's evidence to show that if you took creatine, that it attenuates the detriments of sleep deprivation. And this has been shown a few times with some standardized neuropsychology tests. But then there's also been evidence in athletic populations as well. So rugby players, they had them sleep deprived. So they got 3 hours a night of sleep. And what they measured was passing accuracy. So that's a very cognitively demanding motor task. What they found was when they're sleep deprived, their passing accuracy, passing the rugby ball, went down. But if they took creatine, it didn't go down. So it shows that creatine can offset some of the detriments from sleep deprivation. I wouldn't say to continue to be sleep deprived all the time and just take creatine, but at least over the short term, there could be some benefits to creatine supplementation, particularly for people who are stressed, mental fatigue, and or sleep deprived.
Yeah. And in the tactical population, I would say that sleep deprivation is probably the number one issue that most people are going to face. Accuracy, definitely going to be important, especially for somebody who needs to be proficient in marksmanship. definitely. Sleep also being just one of the number one killers of, you know, sex hormones, you know, high risk factor for chronic disease. We talk about that all the time, but not using it as a band-aid, right? It's not a fix-all, it's not a cure-all, but it can definitely help to support a good sleep routine, sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't say to replace sleep with creatine, but there is some benefits, at least over the short term. I was actually at a conference one time and they're talking about caffeine supplementation. So caffeine can affect your cognition, your brain function as well. And they showed that it enhanced processing speed. So you made decisions quicker with caffeine, which was pretty cool. That was pretty exciting. But you actually made the same number of mistakes. So that was kind of interesting because I was like, oh, caffeine can enhance brain function, enhance processing speed, but really it just makes you make mistakes faster. So that was caffeine. So something to be aware of. So people may say, oh, I'm sleep deprived, I'm just going to take some caffeine. But yeah, you're just going to make the same mistakes that you would have just a little bit faster now. So probably a better supplement would be creatine.
What about any studies out there that maybe look at the effects of maybe low to moderate doses of caffeine with creatine, just out of curiosity that you're aware of?
Yeah, so there is a potential interaction at the muscle level. So they have opposing effects on this part of the muscle called the sarcoplasma reticulum that releases calcium, and calcium is important for muscle contraction. There is some evidence that combining at least a fairly high dose of caffeine and creatine at the same time may oppose each other. So we actually did a training study and we were kind of cut short because of COVID, and we had difficulty with recruitment and finishing off the study. But we published our preliminary findings and it showed a really small effect that creatine enhanced muscle growth. So they got bigger quadriceps and we measured that with an ultrasound. But when they took creatine and caffeine, it wasn't the effects on the muscle thickness, on the muscle size, weren't as good as creatine alone. So we do have some whole body kind of training evidence for that. But right now it's, yeah, one study, one outcome measure. And it was a relatively small study because we were cut short with COVID. So I think more studies need to look at the effects of combining creatine and caffeine together.
And what would be considered a high dose of caffeine? Because when we talk to tactical athletes in any branch of service, fire, police, military, the military, I think I heard one time, don't quote me on this because it's just hearsay, is like the largest consumer of energy drinks worldwide. So, you know, average intake sometimes is anywhere between 600 and 900 milligrams a day, believe it or not. And I'm just putting that out there when people come to me and they tell me how much caffeine they're taking in, that's the feedback that I'm getting. So I'm not quoting a study or anything like that, but what would you consider a high dose that based on the study you just cited, could potentially, you know, be opposing to creatine intake?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually can't remember the exact dosage. I think it was 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. And so most of the performance studies use between 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 milligrams per kilogram of body weight of caffeine. And so if you go above that, then that's definitely a high dose of caffeine. But even in a can of Red Bull, for example, there's about 80 milligrams of caffeine. Mm-hmm. So if you're an 80 kilogram individual, to get 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight of caffeine, you would have to ingest 3 cans of Red Bull, like in that one sitting. So I think of it as a decent amount of caffeine, but if somebody's consuming 900 milligrams of caffeine in a day, that is a huge amount. And the other thing I'd like,
I'm not going to name any names, but there are lots of companies out there who have about 300 milligrams per can.
Oh man, that's crazy.
Yeah, we'll talk about it after the recording stops. But there, 300 milligrams per can. So if we're talking about like a 200 pound individual, roughly 100 kilograms, right? I mean, we're talking about one can a day of these particular types of energy drinks. And then if they're attempting to supplement creatine on top of that, there's the potential, again, more studies needed, but there is the potential that you could be working against yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also the downstream effects of caffeine is it has a fairly long half-life. So in most individuals, it's about a 4-hour half-life, which means that if you have, 100, I'm just going to use arbitrary units here. So 100, whatever of caffeine in your body, you wait 4 hours, it's down to 50. You wait another 4 hours, it's down to 25. So it takes a long time to actually clear caffeine out of your body. And we know that because if you have caffeine at supper time, 6 o'clock, for example, even if you wait till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, you try to go to sleep, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have had coffee at supper time. It stays in your body for a long time. The other thing with caffeine research right now is we have different genotypes. So we have, it's called the CYP1A2 genotype, which is involved with how fast we metabolize caffeine. And so you could be a fast metabolizer of caffeine or a slow metabolizer of caffeine. And there's some evidence that if you want the performance benefits of caffeine, you need to be a fast metabolizer of caffeine. And so there are people that respond better to caffeine supplementation based off of different expressions of these genes.
And not to get too far off topic, but I believe there's also some evidence that you can build up a tolerance to caffeine, especially if you're a chronic high doser.
Yeah, totally. So, maybe you have to go off caffeine for a period of time to get the performance benefits. So yeah, not my area of expertise, but any kind of supplement that starts with C gets me excited, I guess.
Well, I love to just throw things out there. So we've talked about muscle health. We've talked about brain health. Now, another thing that I want to kind of get into that's not really talked about in terms of creatine is DNA methylation. Can we talk a little bit about that without getting too into the weeds with it? It's my understanding that when we're talking about methylation, we're talking about the body's ability to enhance those health promoting genes. Is that sort of accurate?
Yeah, so there's really not a lot of evidence right now, at least that I'm aware of, to really show some of the benefits of creatine with regards to that. But I'm definitely an area that needs to be explored more.
Okay. It's just something throwing out there, see things on social media. So we got to ask the experts about whether or not it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then on top of brain health, right, we've talked about sleep. Sort of the cognitive benefits related to maybe like anxiety, depression, would you say that that's maybe sort of a side effect of being able to improve energy availability in the brain along with, maybe improving sleep quality?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a pretty big study in the US that had about 20,000 individuals, and they showed a relationship between dietary creatine intake and risk of depression. So if you had lower dietary creatine intake, you were at a higher risk of depression. So there's at least some correlational association data. So we need to be aware that it's just looking at that relationship between things. It's not causation. And so we need to do randomized controlled trials to really see if, having low amounts of creatine in your diet causes depression or is linked to it in some capacity, but there's definitely that association. So I would recommend if individuals are depressed or have high anxiety, that creatine could be of benefit. So there is a kind of a growing body of research to investigate that area.
So I'm not really hearing any negative things about creatine.
There's not too many negative things associated with creatine. Obviously, in some people during that loading phase, they could have some GI distress. If somebody does have kidney dysfunction, I probably wouldn't recommend creatine at this point. Although there is some researchers in the Netherlands that are starting to look at creatine in individuals receiving dialysis, because when they receive dialysis, their creatine levels go down, and we know that creatine can benefit the muscle and the brain. And so they're looking at creatine supplementation in individuals who are receiving dialysis. So it'll be really interesting to see the results of that. But normally I say, whoa, you know, if somebody has kidney disease, go talk to your physician. And like, we don't have any really good safety data on that, but there are studies that are being proposed right now and about to be conducted looking at creatine in individuals that have chronic kidney disease.
Yeah. And just to be clear, right? So if you're suspecting any type of chronic disease, kidney injury, just any type of metabolic disorder, you always want to check with your physician before starting any type of supplement regimen, no matter how safe that supplement might be in healthy individuals. So I think that's good to point out. What else do we need to know about this magical, magical supplement that you would like people to know?
There's one thing that I get asked all the time, and it's, does creatine cause hair loss? And so there was a study in rugby players where they showed an increased conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, which is DHT. And DHT has been linked to male pattern baldness. So a bunch of people now basically spout that creatine causes hair loss, but there's actually been no study that's ever investigated creatine and actually measured hair follicles or hair growth. And so we don't know, to me, there's no mechanisms to explain why creatine would cause a greater conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. And if you look at that study, what happened was the placebo group went down, and they couldn't explain that as well. And the creatine group slightly went up. So at the end of the study, they said that creatine caused an increase in DHT, but it was all within normal physiological ranges. And so that study has some problems with it. It was a single study, and it actually never measured hair loss. So I'd like people to know that creatine does not cause hair loss, even though if you look at my head, I'm definitely going bald. And so I'm not the best representative to say that creatine does not cause hair loss, but there is no evidence for that.
All right, so creatine is not a steroid. It does not cause hair loss, and it is safe and effective for most people. So I think that's kind of all of the myth busting that we can kind of do today. At least on my end, those cover a lot of the questions that I get. And I think people are already going to have their minds blown from everything that we've already talked about today. So I have to ask you, if people want to find you or want to read your research, where can they do that? I know you're going to be presenting, correct, at the ISSN conference?
Yeah, so definitely they can come to Fort Lauderdale in June 16th to the 18th is the ISSN conference, the International Society of Sport Nutrition. So they can come see me speak there. But otherwise, you can find me on Instagram, Scott_Forbes_PhD. And that's probably the best place to find information. And I post a lot of the studies that we publish and just other kind of creatine facts that I find on social media that I like. I share on my page there as well. So, and I also try to respond to people as quickly as possible on Instagram.
And then I have to give you a little shout out on these Christmas ornaments that I found on your Instagram page. So for those of you guys who can't see my screen, there are these wonderful wood ornaments that say creatine is a gateway drug. Creatine is not a steroid, with the chemical formula on them, and they're fantastic. And these will absolutely be going up on my Christmas tree this year.
Awesome. Yeah. So my wife is involved with, she has this fancy laser and does woodwork and things like that. And my kids actually make earrings as well. So they're big into, you know, crafts and arts and all these things. So I got them to make a couple, funny creatine ornaments. So I'll definitely send you some creatine ornaments.
Awesome. So I'm going to post the link to these and your contact information in the show notes, because you guys have to pick some of these up. These are phenomenal. I love them. Thanks for being with us today, Scott. I hope you had as much fun as I did. We could probably talk about a million other things regarding creatine, but I think this will sate our audience for today. I'd love to have you back sometime as you're doing more research, as new things come up. I hope you'll keep us in the loop.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you.